Okay, thank you, David. And I will put out in the title that this is a Southeastern perspective and not the Southeastern perspective. So it's a highly biased view based on, you know, some of our own work in North Carolina coastal plain. But most of what I'm talking about is some general concepts. And I think that in many cases you'll see that some of these concepts are probably a little bit different in the Southeast due to the climate and soils than they are in some of the other regions of the country. We'd like to acknowledge the collaborators that have worked on me the last several years in some aspects of this. Jeff White, Ronnie Heiniger, and Randy Wise, that are faculty at NC State, and then some of the former grad students from our department who have worked with us. Jared Williams, Robbie Strupata, and Nan Hung. And, you know, funding, we've gotten a variety of funding through state commodity associations. We're also thankful that the USDA IFAS program has funded some of this. Well, to set the stage in North Carolina, we've got a set of current recommendations, and we've heard some similar things from other states. But the basis is the rate we recommend, the underlying basis is what we call realistic yield expectation, or RYE, and that's multiplied by a factor. If we're talking about recommendations, we give a range. The lower end of that range is 18, the higher 22.5 kilograms in per megagram, and that's 1 to 1.25 pounds per bushel grain. Now, for nutrient management planning contracts, there is a specific value, and that value is tied to the soil map unit or soil series. Okay. Now, to fine-tune that that rate, there are some adjustments that are kind of crude. If it's irrigated land and recognition of a greater leaching potential, we'll increase our recommendation. And if we're following a legume, we'll decrease the recommendation. So we're sort of a semi-quantitative approach there. But as far as timing, we do recommend starter fertilizer followed by the majority at side dress. Again, the general rate, about 40 to 60 centimeters tall. The concept there would be the earlier they're going to put out the side dress, the less they need to have a starter. Okay. And if folks who are really doing a tall, late side dress application would skew that program toward a higher nitrogen rate at planting without really specifying what the mix is going to be. And there's quite a bit of supporting data for this program. And it dates back to the 50s, and I'm happy to see Gene Camprath in the audience. He's been involved with many of the fertilizer response tests in North Carolina. But I think everyone recognizes that there are potential problems. And these are generalizations, and we really, other than some crude estimates, we really are not making any adjustment for soil residual nitrogen, you know, except for when we build in this legume credit. That's sort of a surrogate for doing that. And this is where we really see the potential for a soil test to contribute some information toward that part of the decision. And the other thing is that we're not making any adjustment for current conditions on that plan. And you can kind of read that as weather. And I think the only thing there is we've got options with crop remote sensing is what I'll talk about. Some other programs use different decision tools. But. Now, every place you go, there's going to be soil variability. And so we don't really have any claim that's different for us than anywhere else. But what the type of variability, and again, this is just limited to what we're seeing in North Carolina coastal plain. We're finding that variability is in drainage and the organic matter content. And these are ranging from peat soils, which are artificially drained to permit cultivation, to poorly drained mineral soils, to some well and excessively drained mineral soils. Now what this has done, historically, if we look at the nutrient management planning guidelines, when we tie a nitrogen factor to a soil type in recognition of the greater leaching potential on these coarse sands, those soils will have a higher factor value. In recognition of the greater potential of an organic matter to supply nitrogen or with a finer texture to limit leaching, we use a lower factor on the organic soils. The other thing that I think has been different than some other regions of the country is Southeast has never gotten very far along in calibrating soil nitrate test data. We do see a tremendous amount of variety in terms of the physical nature of the soil and how it changes with depth, and it makes all kinds of sampling decisions very complicated. I think the best data I've seen from around the country with soil nitrates is if we're using a deep sampling. If we start thinking about different sampling depths in North Carolina, we're not only getting into different profiles, but as we move around the state, we'd have to make a different decision with different soil types of what that depth would be. So it's like a lot of other things. When in a complex situation, our answer has been just to stick with a simple number. And the things I'm talking about with soil sampling, we just limit it to topsoil. And I have looked at, and this is a subset of some of the nitrogen response tests that we've done in the Tidewater region. I put together from 21 tests where we have all the same yield and soil data. And if we look at these, not unlike other regions, we can go to our maximum yield, look at the optimum nitrogen rate to achieve that yield, and then calculate what our apparent efficiency is. And in this case, we're an average 17.8, and that's very near the lower limit of that recommendation range. And we like to be kind of conservative, and well, we like to be in the position, if we recommend something, we'd like farmers not to think they're under-fertilizing. So that's about where we'd want to be. However, well, if we look at the variability about that, we've got sites that are not, it's fairly rare, but we do have sites that are not responding to nitrogen, where we're at that maximum yield with no nitrogen, and we've got others that take twice as much or more. And again, this is one of those limitations of our general program. As far as soil nitrate, on average, we tend to have very little profile nitrate. For these sites, 12 kilograms per hectare, and we've several of those we had zero. If we look at a mineralization assay for available soil nitrogen, it tends to be about four times more mineralizes. So we ended up in the average 56 kilograms per hectare. Quite a bit of variability. Now in this case, the lower values there tend to be some of our sandy mineral soils. These higher values tend to be our organic soils. And that fits in pretty well with this long-standing recommendation of if we're adjusting that rate, the factor based on soil type, we would use a lower factor for the organic soils. However, if we look at this next column, I haven't published this data, but did some denitrification assays along with these soil tests. And then again, it's artificial conditions, but it's kind of classic soil in a tube, spike it with nitrate, let it sit in an incubator for a week. We see some pretty substantial amounts of nitrogen. And on average, we could denitrify 101 kilograms per hectare. Well, if we look at our organic soils, and those are the maximum, we can get over, if we believe the transition, the math of calculating from a tube to a soil, we could denitrify as much in 1 week as we're applying fertilizer for that crop. And I think some of the uncertainty that we're seeing, if we look at nitrogen response test, is associated with these potential reactions in the soil. And again, if we think about our long-standing recommendations, in this case, our organic soils, we might make a different decision. Because if we've got a greater potential to denitrify there, maybe on those soils, that lower nitrogen factor may not be that accurate. Okay, so our general approach, if we want to improve nitrogen recommendations, is to think about using a soil test. And what I'm describing is a modified version of the Illinois test to quantify residual N, and then use adjust starter or perhaps early side dress rate, and then use remote sensing, and then the work we've done has used color IR aerial photos to adjust the late side dress rate, and either of those two could be applied on either a whole field or variable rate within field strategy. Okay. And this slide sort of summarizes what Jared Williams has published with our experiences with the Illinois soil nitrogen test. And that's plotted on the x-axis and the economic optimum nitrogen rate on the y-axis. And he found some fairly good linear relationships as long as you'll sort of listen to the qualifiers. If we separate soils into well-drained soils, again, we get a nice regression line there. Soils that we can categorize as poorly drained there, and then our relationships really break down for the very poorly drained. Okay? We were looking for an objective criteria to separate soils, and we came up with soil drainage class, seems fairly objective. In practice, there's a little subjectivity because we've got soils that are mapped as poorly drained, but that are very poorly drained, and we do have artificial drainage to farm them. So the subjectivity comes in exactly which category do they fall in. But they do, this does illustrate some interesting principles. And again, if we look what's not on the line, the triangles there, these are moderate drought soils. Okay, when we've got a moderate drought, you know, rather than nitrogen being limiting, water is being limiting. So those fall below the predicted regression line. Okay, what happens as we get to poorer and poorer drainage? Soils are requiring progressively more and more nitrogen than predicted based on the sort of our standard interpretation of the technique. So if we think back to our soil data and potential transitions that can occur during incubations, okay, well maybe we're denitrifying a lot more nitrogen in these wetter, as it gets wetter and wetter, and that's why we have to put out the higher nitrogen rates. Alternatively, we could be mineralizing less. But what, either of those two explanations could certainly explain why, as we go to a more poorly drained soils, we're requiring more and more nitrogen. Now, on that graph, this bar, and that's how we handle the number scale. We just make a thicker bar on the graph. So, okay, that's the Illinois critical level. Now, something I do think is probably a difference between the Southeast and the Midwest is, you know, most of our response values were less than that. Okay, we got very few until we get into poorly drained, very poorly drained sites. Basically, all our mineral sites were well below that. And we also find no sites in this study where we had zero. All of them responded to nitrogen. Okay. Now, we did modify the test, so there's a chance part of that's due to our methods. We're using an incubator rather than a hot plate, and that can lower the value. But I think it probably also reflects the difference between primarily ultisols and primarily mollisols, where with the soils we have developed, we've just got less residual nitrogen stored in the soil. Okay. Well, any test like this is still going to have the limitation. Okay, we can't predict post-sampling changes. And what our approach says is, okay, we can start with something like this, but then you really need that crop canopy evaluation in order to see what's gone on so far during the season. And a late side dress for us is just a second opportunity to make a decision. And we've done a variety of tests over the years, and we're pretty convinced that we can drive corn as late as tasseling without damaging the crop. And the exception might be we do have a set of farmers that are going high population corn, 20-inch rows, and that's going to be a bigger challenge. But most of our corn is 30-inch rows, and some 36. But you know, we can drive it this late, and if we think about the corn nitrogen uptake curve, if we don't run out of water, we still have about a third of the nitrogen left to be taken up, tasseling to harvest. So we do think it's an opportunity to make a second decision. Okay, well, is it practical? I've done a set of 12 tests the last couple years where the bottom line on that graph represents a set of test plots. And what you're seeing on the x-axis is how much nitrogen went out, either a combination of starter or early application. These are on-farm tests. The top line is we split the plots and we put an extra 56 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. One thing that's come out pretty consistent is if we're low at that early nitrogen rate, we get a big response. There's a big difference between these two lines. As we move, not unexpectedly, as we get to higher and higher early rates, these two lines get closer together. Okay, and we can calculate, estimate a price difference and of how far they apart they have to be to pay for that late application. But the general principle is that we can recommend that at-tasseling response in certain cases, but only in certain cases, not as a blanket application, because when we get to high enough rates, we're not getting any extra response. But if we put out nitrogen early and we lose it, okay, we get average 40 to 60 inches of rain a year, so we've got a pretty high potential for leaching denitrification losses. If we lose it, then we can add a tasseling, make up some of that potential yield loss. And if we have a program that we plan to reduce it early and then add nitrogen at tasseling as needed, okay? So what we need to know is, you know, how much can we reduce it? In this case, as we reduce it, we're losing some of our overall yield potential, okay? Well, how do we make that decision? And this is where I think we'd use a soil test to make that decision. Because if we knew how much we had residual, we could decide how much to back off on the early nitrogen rate and then set ourselves up for a second decision. Now, that previous test, we had a fixed rate applied at tasseling. Well, how much do we really need at tasseling? And this is a kind of a summary of Ravi Sripada's work. He's had a couple of publications where he set up numerous nitrogen response tests. And again, each line on this test would generate a data point where he would calculate economic optimum nitrogen rate. He did these numerous sites, and at each site, he had different nitrogen rates at planting. Well, you know, photographing those sites with a color infrared film, digitizing it, his best parameter to use was relative green difference vegetation index, and came up with an algorithm, the RGDVI here, correlated with the optimum N rate at tasseling. And so, you know, although there's some scatter about there, we at least have a relationship that we can use. Now, he's done some testing of that verification, and that's the kind of thing that probably needs more site years, more verification. But we do have an algorithm where we know if we get nitrogen out, we can get a response at tasseling, and this type of relationship will tell us, you know, what the optimal rate would be. Okay, so we have that part of the test. We've done some evaluations on applying that either to a whole field or variable rate within a field. And we did manage one large field test where we put side dress out using the algorithm. We got it out at tasseling in 2002. Weather delayed us a little bit. We didn't get it out till R1 in 2004. So that's certainly an issue we know we're going to need to deal with, is that window of opportunity. If we can push this a little earlier, we've got a little less risk of weather delays. But our basic experiment, we put it out, you know, six row sprayer, and 9 meters long was a minimum pixel. And in our case, we had a squeeze pump. We've worked with all sorts of spray systems, but we had 15 rate steps in there. And we did a grain harvest, got yield and georeference grain samples to calculate NUE, and did some groundwater sampling to see if we could pick up nitrate differences. And a typical pattern, this is at the site. This is a digital topo map identifying a low spot. This is that low spot. Even though it's less than 1% slopes, that's enough to, in terms of long-term soil formation, to generate more soil organic matter. And that generally correlates with our soil map unit. And in this year, what I'm showing you here is the RYE is our standard approach. We put out an early side dress, a starter and early side dress, where we had site-specific management. We reduced the early side dress and put out at tasseling as needed. Now, we did have a dry year. We had low yield and minimal nitrogen response, but it was statistically significant. We did use more nitrogen to get it out, the site-specific, but since we had more nitrogen in the grain, when we calculate an apparent nitrogen uptake efficiency, they were very similar. So we can get a significant yield increase using that variable rate side dress at tasseling. Now, we'd like to be able to say we can get groundwater nitrate improvements. We've tried to sample that. We found tremendous variability in nitrate concentrations, and they seem to fluctuate along with water table depth, which is in the bottom half of the graph there. So that's been more complicated than we expected. We have found, though, for example, these are two sample dates in May after we did the early side dress. Okay, the RYE treatment received all its nitrogen by that time. These other two, we lowered the early side dress and we reduced the amount of nitrate that moved to groundwater. Okay. So when we've got small plants in the field, we reduce that nitrogen rate, we reduce nitrate moving down. Now we came back to these two treatments at Tasling, and they're the only two that received side dress late. And at that late date, we did not measure any extra nitrate in the groundwater. But again, it's with a highly variable background. Okay, so if we were to combine these two approaches, we're really talking about a sometime pre-plant, use the Illinois soil nitrogen test, characterize residual N, and vary either the starter fertilizer rate or the early side dress rate. And then at Tasling, and we hope to be able to get a decision earlier, say by VT, use remote sensing and side dress as needed. Okay, well, what's the status of that system? The whole system together hadn't been tested. Okay, we've just done the separate components. What we do think we need a better understanding of for this Illinois soil test, through these meetings and publications, you're aware there's been quite a bit of regional differences. How am I doing on time, Dave? Okay. We think those needed to be sorted out just so we can have a little bit more confidence in how we use our own calibration data. There certainly needs to be a standard protocol. We've gone to an incubator. I'm aware that other states are looking at, if we use an incubator, maybe we need to vary the length of the incubation. Okay. So I think among the different states, we need to settle on what that protocol would be. You know, what's it going to cost? That's going to depend on whether or not it's a whole field or site-specific approach. If we consider what soil sampling costs today and what a likely lab assay would cost, I think that's probably going to be somewhere $10 to $30 a hectare for the soil test. The VT side dress, you know, will it be accepted by farmers? We've got some good data that shows when we get a yield advantage to it. Okay. Again, I guess the harder group to convince is if they're going to 20-inch rows, that we'll have a hard time convincing people to drive that. But we are generating databases on frequency of response and how much nitrogen we respond to. Maybe a bigger, you know, all our program has been based on aerial photography. Quite a few other programs have been ground-based sensor approaches. Could certainly fine-tune that, and you know, how much is that going to cost? It depends on the final technology, but we do have an aerial photo industry, and just talking to them on what they're doing for other program crop monitoring programs with cotton and things like that, we would guess somewhere $3 to $12 per hectare cost. And what are the environmental benefits? We'd certainly like to have direct water measurements. What we're seeing with our nitrate data is we'd have to do some pretty intensive sampling just to work with the background fluctuations. I think it's going to be a lot easier to get indirect data of nitrogen uptake efficiency. And through yield monitors and grain sampling, we can probably do that. And I think if we can show that, you know, we sort of work with the economics. If we can show that, we certainly have an argument for ag cost share funds as a BMP. So open it up for any questions at this time.
Time for questions.